Technorama episode 634, My Spirit Animal is a Tribble.
On cue.
At least it wasn't the angry tribble. See, all I have to do is push one button, and I get my topic is Trek sound effects. It's a wonderful thing. Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you're a first time joining us, thank you very much. Wow, it's only been 634 shows in 16 years. You know, where have you been? But if you're coming back, we've got people that have been watching or listening to this show for a long, long time, and we greatly appreciate that. If you do, then you'll remember my name, which is
Mud
Chuck. It's on the inside of my shirt. I'm Chuck, and right over there in the red shirt is a red shirt.
No, oh crap! Here, I'll just take it off.
No. Bear chicka,
Here, let's get this.
And look, it's March and we've got Santa Claus on the show. This is what he does in the off season.
No, have you been good boys?
Oh, no. Heavens, no.
No.
It's supposed to?
It's no. Brian Brown. We have not. It's been about 18 months since you've been on the show.
It's been a long time.
It has been a long time.
Yeah, started he moves COVID. Out and he doesn't have a call after he leaves. Man.
You know, COVID, I don't know. It's kind of crazy.
What else did you have to do?
Lost my job.
New
you know,
house.
That sort of thing.
The whole new house thing.
Yeah.
Remember? Yeah. Crashy, rebuildy. Yeah. Used to live here.
It was good times, though.
Several times you've lived here.
So how's the new and improved house?
It's actually excellent. There are things that need to still be fixed, obviously, but with COVID, no. Mm-hmm. So we're probably just going to just leave them as is. You know, there's lots of paint touch-ups that need to be done. Obviously, I need to unpack still. we threw away. I mean, as I said, you know, last time I think I was on, which I don't remember, it was a while ago. We filled two 60-ton dumpsters full of stuff. So
wow.
Oh, really? That much? Wow. Mm-hmm.
Well, not only it was just, you know, a lot of construction materials and stuff too, but also just a lot of crap, 20 some odd years worth of crap in this house. So
apparently you know. Your beard trimming stuff you threw out too, because, you know, just let it go.
Wait, what beard? What are you talking about?
You lost some other valuable stuff. I think you said a leather jacket, some of your albums, a lot of the liquor collection was lost.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Tons of stuff was just lost and thrown out, you know, on top of that. So, you know. What we've started unpacking, we've unpacked quite a bit of things. You know, the living room's mostly clear, kitchen is clear, bedrooms are clear, one of the bedrooms is clear, bathrooms, that sort of thing. But there's still lots to go. We have one whole bedroom that's still full to the top with boxes that we should need to go through. And we wanted to donate a lot of it, as well as throw it away. But with COVID, no, just we don't go anywhere. So,
yeah,
pretty much.
One of the ladies from church says, we're investing in nesting.
That's a good way to put it.
We're looking at, we've replaced our front doors, our door with doors. So we now have wider doors so you can actually get a refrigerator in the house.
Nice.
What else did we do? We're looking at painting. We're going to do some significant painting. Obviously, I've been working on the studio. I give you that mini tour beforehand. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of things. So it's been fun and more to come. I'd love to put in more skylights in this house.
Still, oh, yeah. There's some dark spots in that house.
There are
sure.
some dark spots. And I think that was one of the reasons why it didn't sell so well. But hey, when I got a house with a studio.
Bonus.
Works for me. So, yeah. Shall we get on with the show, Craig? We've got some feedback from last week's question.
Yeah. That's funny.
Wow. Take it easy there, pal. Try not to work too hard.
Letters.
We got letters.
Lettuce.
Lettuce alone.
Reach right and pull one out. Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you got to say.
Oh, boy.
Mailman.
Ryan's got those dancing inchworms or something.
Jazz hands.
All right, I'll take my page. Craig, you take your page. Ryan, you get the Technorama page.
All right.
Click the link and see what happens.
Oh, my.
I got one. I feel like Charlie Brown at Halloween on this one.
I got a rock.
All right. Guess I'll start.
What's the question of the week, Chuck?
The question of the week is, what would 12-year-old you never believe about adult you? And Eric says that I had achieved the American dream. I had to Google that. 12 years old is 6th or 7th grade. So the American dream is what? You own a house?
House, married,
huge car, debt,
picket fence,
kids, car, yeah.
Overweight? I'm not sure.
Alcohol addiction.
Some kind of addiction.
Yeah. Thanks, COVID.
Yeah. Wow.
All right. Anyone have any other answers? I'm done.
Yeah, let's see. Gary Lindros says, thank you that you would need an encyclopedia, that you would not need an encyclopedia to look up things.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one, actually.
Encyclopedias. Oh, my gosh. My parents were just talking about that because my mom got a mention in the Encyclopedia Britannica, and she had a full copy of the Encyclopedia Britannica when I was a kid. And they moved it a couple of times, but eventually they said, look, we're downsizing. It's heartbreaking.
She was mentioned in the 2015 version.
No, it was like the 1975 version. So you can imagine, you know, Rhodesia isn't a country anymore.
Wait, what was she in there for?
I thought it had something to do with scuba diving physics or something. I don't remember exactly what the mention was, but yeah, I mean, that'd be like, what, getting your own Wikipedia page or mentioned on IMDb or something? That's pretty snazzy.
Get your own Wikipedia pages for free. So you can just...
Okay, your own Amazon page for making a book.
Yeah.
Yeah, or some sort of citation online. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's big.
Yeah.
All right, who do I have? Oh, I have the Facebook one. Okay. So Amy Bowen says that I'd move away from Southern California and actually like it here in the Midwest.
I didn't know she was from Southern California.
I didn't know that either. And then also she owns an actual Jedi outfit.
She made it herself.
Yeah, I know.
It's an awesome Jedi outfit.
Tiffany Mangan says that I became a nurse of all things.
I wonder what she wanted to be when she grew up.
Yeah, that's a good question, actually.
A doctor. She didn't quite make it.
Easy there, pal.
Wow.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Send your hate mail to Craig.
Yeah.
I can see Tiffany's queuing up Messenger right now.
I can't believe I saw a picture of the little girl. Like, she's not a little girl anymore. She's walking around with a digital camera. Like, what?
What happened to my last year and a half? John Miller Jr. says that I'm working on my third college degree. I'm roughly 60% done as of this post. I'm rocking a 3.5 GPA and that he's on the dean's list.
We salute you, John Miller Jr., for your third degree.
No belt. Joke.
Black bust.
Steve Lennon says, now that I will turn 50, the 12-year-old me didn't even believe me turning 20. And that was way old then. Because he said 50 was his grandfather's age. And now, And now these married, also being married, he said, girls back then were scary back then. And then also him having kids. We all know how that happens. And it was unthinkable, but the phase passed quite quick.
I think that was one of my comments, too, when we were discussing it at the end of the last show. That I'd have a girlfriend, get married, and have children? That didn't seem conceivable when I was 12 years old.
Yeah. John Kratzer says that I used to live in Hawaii.
Ooh.
And Lone Guy's Knight says that I have not yet been to Mars.
Yeah.
Yet. He's got his yet. I like that qualifier.
Yes.
I would say that I don't have flying car by now.
Well, it is 2021. You would have expected the flying cars.
Or at least some sort of autonomous vehicle of some sort.
I'm waiting. Tesla's almost there.
Thank you for riding Johnny Cab.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rudy. I'm trying to think what my 12-year-old... I think that I'd be living in Phoenix for one, because I was living in Montana at the time, my family. Mm-hmm. But we moved to Phoenix, and that I would never leave.
I never thought I'd have a third degree black belt in anything.
Yeah,
that was pretty amazing. I have 7D20s.
12-year-old couldn't afford that many.
12-year-old's going, what's wrong with you? You should have 25 of them.
Yeah, right. That's true. Yeah. Boy, that's kind of, it's an interesting question. Hmm. Good times.
Yep. Yep.
And that's it for me on my list.
Are you done also, Craig?
Yeah, let's see. I think, what's that? Day?
What we mined out all the good ones.
Oh, Craig Lassner says that I now live in a city.
Hmm.
I think he always lived in a city.
He was raised in the woods by wolves.
I had a cave growing up.
I had a cardboard box out on a dirt road.
Mama Wolf didn't think I would ever leave the place, but
I showed her.
Yeah, I showed her.
And that's taking us to the end. We'll have another question for you at the end of the show. Gary snuck in another one. Jetpacks.
Yeah. Jetpacks.
Okay, roll your D20s. Just one of them. Here we go. We're doing the history segment. We have to find out what order we go in.
I got a 14.
20? Nice, Kurt.
Yes, I did.
I got a 10.
Okay, so Chuck, Craig, you got a 14?
Yes. Yep.
Chuck, Craig, Bry.
Chuck, Craig, Brian. We can do that. And there go my arms on Facebook. It's so fun watching yourself 30 seconds in the past.
I know. I can't do that. I start going, what's he saying? Oh, wait. I'm not looking at this.
Chuck, one. Craig, Brian. Cue the music. On this day in history for March 24th, 2021, it is the 83rd day of the year in the Gregorian calendar, and there are just 282 days remaining in the year.
It was shopping in.
On this date in 1721 that Johann Sebastian Bach dedicated six concertos to Margrave Christian Ludwig of Brandenburg-Schwedt. Were they Schwedt-y concertos? Never mind. Yes. They are, of course, now called the Brandenburg Concertos.
On March 24th, 1882, Robert Koch announced the discovery of Mycobacterium tuberculosis, the bacterium responsible for tuberculosis.
That was responsible for baseball.
That's right.
Thanks for clarifying that.
He discovered mold. It was this date in 1900 that the mayor of New York City, Robert Anderson Van Wyck, broke ground for a new underground rapid transit railroad that would link Manhattan and Brooklyn.
Rapid meaning it goes 15 miles an hour.
Yeah, faster than you walking or swimming.
Barely. But you had to get out and push. It was 63 years ago today that rock and roll teen idol Elvis Presley was drafted into the U.S. Army. Craig?
I'm losing my internet there.
Yeah, apparently. Oh, Zoom, okay. Gotta love it.
I know,
take
right?
a drink.
So where are we at?
You gotta drink every time Zoom tells you your internet connection may be unstable or someone's accidentally on mute.
No, no. Yeah.
Well, I was sitting there going, I heard Brian, and I heard him just fade
okay,
away.
Okay, it's like, your turn about that thing that happened in 1965 with the images from Ranger 9.
Oh, right. Oh, you want me to read it?
Please continue.
It was on this date in 1965 that images from the Ranger 9 lunar probe were broadcast live on network television.
We were all on the edge of our seats.
That's right. I think you need to read the one about the also on today in 1993.
That's Brian's turn.
Yeah. Also in 1993, discovery of Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9.
And we talked to David Levy. We talked to him way back when. We have an interview with him in the Technorama archives. We're very happy and proud about that. I'll talk about something else that's in the archives that came up today. That same date in 1998, the first computer-assisted bone segment navigation was performed at the University of Regensburg, Germany. Hmm. Regensburg.
Regensburg. And happy birthday on this date goes out to English carpenter and clockmaker invented the marine chronometer. John Harrison was born on this date in 1963.
That is a big thing to have a marine chronometer. To tell you the longitude.
Born March 24th, 1820, French physicist and academic Edmond Becquerel.
I'm trying to remember what he was famous for. Becquerel is I know that name, but I'm trying to remember why, but I can't remember at the moment. So, American soldier, geologist, and explorer John Wesley Powell. Yeah, the man who went in a little boat down the Grand Canyon, the Colorado River. He was born 187 years ago today.
Jeez. And Joseph Stefan, the Austrian physicist, mathematician, and poet, was born 168 years ago today.
Josef, he's Austrian. Josef.
Born March 24th, 1874, Hungarian Jewish American magician and actor Harry Houdini.
Wait, that's just his stage name.
That was, yeah, that's right.
Nothing to see here. Nothing to see here. It's all illusion.
Peter Debye, the Dutch American physicist and chemist and Nobel Prize laureate, was born on this date 137 years ago today.
And German astronomer and author Walter Bade, born on this date in 1893.
American animator, director, producer, co-creator Mickey Mouse, Ub Iwerks.
iWorks. It's a software program for the Apple.
Ah, was born 120 years ago today.
How many of you even knew there was a co-creator to Mickey Mouse?
I know, right?
Walt
really stole the show on that one, didn't he?
Could you imagine going to iWorks World?
Yeah.
Oob World.
Yeah. Oob World.
Oobland.
Come on to Oobland. Half of Bonnie and Clyde, the male half, Clyde Barrel, was born today in 1909.
And born March 24th, 1911. American animator, director, and producer co-founded Hanna-Barbera. Joseph Barbera, or Yosef Barbera.
if he's from Israel, he's Yosef.
Yeah, Yosef
Barbera. A Norman Fell, American actor, born on the same date, 1924.
Mr. Roper?
Yeah, Mr. Roper.
No, Steve McQueen. I was waiting for Craig. Steve McQueen, the American actor and producer, was born 91 years ago today.
You're waiting on me. It's your turn. Also born on that same date in 1951, American fashion designer founded the Tommy Hilfiger Corporation. Can you guess his name?
George Westinghouse.
Smith.
Yeah, you're both right.
Okay.
Tommy Hilfiger.
Oh.
Bill Gates.
Wow. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Kinda Louis weird. Anderson. I'll bet his name's Louis Anderson.
Yeah, there
Tommy
you go.
Tommy Hilfiger Smith Gates.
But, Chuck, you're partially right. American actor and comedian Louis Anderson, born this date in 1953.
It's like we planned this out.
I know.
And
crazy.
Speaking of Steve Palmer.
Speaking of.
Don't try a pun with one word in your mind and eyes on the screen. It doesn't work. Wow, that was a brain short circuit that didn't work. Speaking of Bill Gates, it's Steve Ballmer's birthday. He's 65.
And last but not least, also turning 61 today, is German singer-songwriter and actress Nina.
How many balloons did she have?
97.5.
With inflation.
And they were actually kind of a mauve color, not really red.
I think it was more of a fuchsia.
Yeah, fuchsia. As a matter of fact.
I like the taupe balloon.
More like crimson, really.
99 taupe balloons.
It doesn't roll off the tongue quite as well, does it?
No, we got to come up with another color for this song.
Let's follow up that one hit with 99 taupe balloons.
Wait, you know, in German, it's 99 Luftballons, which isn't the color.
No.
Okay, well, let's do the listener birthdays because we have four of them. We have Nick St. Gabriel on the 25th. My cousin, my nephew, and Leonard Nimoy on the 26th, as well as Brynna Baird from Hampton, Virginia on the 26th. And the 29th, the man who does America at War podcast, Mark Blackburn. Mm. So happy birthday to all of you. The music, the band left like 10 minutes ago. We have just been dragging this on for a while.
Oh, I didn't even notice. They left.
If you want to get your name on the birthday list, let me just...
How do you do that, Chuck? Tell us how.
Scroll over here. You can go to chuckchat.com/wiki or chuckchat.com/birthday. Fill out the form. It puts it into our database, and we will get you on when your time of year rolls around. And happy birthday to all these other people. And if you were having a birthday this week and we didn't call you out, you're somewhere between the the 24th and the 30th. Happy birthday to you. We wish you all the best. Now, I think we need to get on with the news segment. So I'm going to just pick a random button here.
News and weather, everyone.
That'll do. And Brian, would you like to lead us off?
You bet. Researcher finds a better way to tap into the brain. So, Craig, no more just trying to drill a hole. Nothing like that.
I got him beat. I don't have a brain.
You heard it here, people. You heard it here.
We'll go down that yellow brick road and we'll get you your brain, buddy.
Yeah.
Promise.
All right, let's go.
But first we have to take your arms and throw them over there, and then they throw your legs over there. Yeah,
that's right.
So using a new class of nanoparticles that are 2,000 times thinner than the human hair, Sakrat Kizarev, a professor of electrical and computer engineering in the University of College of Engineering, hopes to unlock the secrets of the brain.
Oh, again. I mean, it's another one.
So here's the interesting thing is that he lost his eyesight in an accident when he was young. And they told him that his vision would come back eventually. And after months, it finally started to, of course, it was blurry. Yeah. And then it slowly really got clearer and clearer. And so it wasn't until, his vision fully, cleared up that he was like, wow, the brain is pretty amazing at what it does. And as he calls it, the CPU of the internet of the body. So that's how he explains it. Says, if only we could tap completely into it and lock all its secrets. And he's on the cusp of doing that using a novel class of ultrafine units called magnetoelectric nanoparticles, or MENPs. He and his research group are perfecting a method to talk to the brain without wires or implants.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, like a lot of people have tried to use external implements, such as microelectrodes to solve it. But guess what? There are 80 billion neurons in your brain, and try to put 80 billion of those things on your head doesn't quite work.
Right.
So he says, hey, guess what? Wirelessly is the best way to do it through nanotech. And so what they plan on doing is introducing a million of these intravenously into the body, allowing particles, which are, again, 2,000 times thinner than human hair, to move freely through the bloodstream and cross the protective blood-brain barrier, so they actually gets into the brain, which normally prevents toxins and pathogens from reaching it.
Right.
And basically says, our brains are pretty much electrical engines. And that's what's remarkable about these little things, these MENPs, is that they understand not only the language of the electric fields, but also the magnetic fields. So once they're inside the brain and positioned next to the neurons, they can stimulate them with external magnetic field and produce electric field, which we can then speak to them without wires. So basically they can speak to your brain through them.
Into an MRI.
Well, yeah, or anything like that, but he said what the great thing about it is that it targets, you could target drug delivery system, so you could learn how to treat Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, depression, anything that has to do with the brain. So also you could, help with neuromorphic computing, as he said, basically a computer that mimics the way the brain works. So you can do computations and whatnot in your brain that will rival massive supercomputers.
Can it feed you the answers to your high school exam questions?
Yes. It'll make you win on trivia night every single time.
So
screw that teacher that said I'd always have to have a calculator or not have one. I need one.
I'm going on Jeopardy.
You know what I'm
after I get those brain implant bots.
Wheel of Fortune, here I come.
That's not
different.
Wasn't Elon Musk doing something like this, but with an implant?
I think there are multiples that are trying to do it with an implant, and they're having so success. But really, I think it's amazing just for the medical applications to it too, as well as, the computer applications as well, which I think is fantastic. And I heard the NSA is really interested in it as well.
You were worried about Google knowing your location.
Exactly. Just walk through this little scanner. Don't worry. Won't feel a thing, but it's really cool still all the way around. And he said, he's just scratching the surface of it, that this is, first steps, and that they're very hopeful for the project moving forward.
Right.
Pretty cool.
Craig, you're up next.
All right. So
what other news do we have?
Speaking of tapping into the brain, sort of, this is a little different. Researchers.
Is anyone in there?
Yeah.
Hello. I'm tapping into your brain.
Oh, yeah. Oh. No, nobody's here. I was thinking, did Zoom flip out again?
It did on me. There was a little gap in there, and then all of a sudden you guys started going real fast.
All right, so researchers develop e-skin that is more sensitive than fingers.
E-skin?
E-skin, that's right.
Interesting.
So South Korean researchers have developed an electronic skin that is more sensitive than the human touch and is capable of distinguishing between the different material, or between different materials. A joint research team from Hoang, a University of Science and Technology and the University of Ulsan, announced on Tuesday that it has succeeded in developing an artificial skin that copies the tactile sense of human fingers. So the researchers developed an elastic high polymer thin film with fine wrinkles. Great, they're already wrinkling the new skin.
When you jump in the pool and you get the raisin fingers.
That's right. Wrinkles on the feet, on the surface, on the basis of the structure of the human fingerprint. By adding a network of silver nanowires and zinc oxide nanowires to the thin film, the research team created a multi-sensory artificial electronic skin with high level of elasticity.
In case you were wondering, what can zinc oxide do for me? Sorry, that was a reference to Kentucky Fried Movie. Never mind. Move on.
Whoa, that was a deep cut.
Very.
The newly developed sensor can distinguish between external stimulus by applying different types of electric operation principles by pressure, tensile strength, and vibration. So the e-sync.
That sounds like something you order from Home Depot.
Yeah. No, you're trying to order a sink off Amazon, and that's the last one. An e-sync? What do I need that for? Bluetooth? What? Can distinguish the type of material by the objects that it contacts by analyzing the complex electric signals that are generated when the objects are rubbed.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah, it's pretty. My first thought was something like this over a prosthetic hand.
Yes, you know, maybe you could. Yes. That's exactly what I'm thinking.
My thoughts went in a whole different direction.
I know where you're going.
I was going to say, you know, when the title said that it had more sensory than the fingers,
the human
like
touch.
The fingers aren't your most sensitive places, people. And yet people want to get that pierced and tattooed. Yeah, lips are obviously one of those places.
Who tattoos their fingers? You're on this side, not this side, but.
Oh, Craig.
My piercing some of my ears either. So
Craig's so naive.
Yeah.
I'm going to get tattooed.
Let's go spelunking through our chat history. What do we got? I got Ralph on YouTube. Let's see what we got. We mentioned Amy at the top of the show. So Amy's joining us. John Miller Jr. Gary Lindros.
Oh, yeah. He seems surprised about what's on my chin. As opposed to
he hasn't been watching lately, has he? Yeah. You've had that beard for a while.
There's a lot of white in yours too, as well, Craig.
Yeah.
That's a little bit. Not so much up here or anything, just on the beard.
It'll creep its way up. I'm up to the Richard Reed. Who's the guy for
Fantastic Four?
Yeah, I've got the Richard Reed shock starting up on the sideburns now. Whenever I got my haircut on Saturday, and I'm like, what old guy was here earlier?
Like, that's you, sir. Get out of my chair.
And then when I got out of the chair, there was hair all over the floor. Like somebody's dog exploded here or something.
Yeah, my hair turned white when I was 28. So
oh my, wow,
it's been that way ever since.
Known a few people like that as well.
Yeah, thanks genetics.
Yeah.
Who else is in there? Is anybody on Facebook?
That's all we see. That was the Facebook people.
Oh, Chuck Tomasi's in there and.
Sort of.
By contract.
So, yeah.
He's contractually obligated to be there.
If you want to join us Sunday nights at 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern, we'd love to see you hang out with us, have some of the fun that we're having in the chat. Put in your snarky comments and be part of the show. We'd love to see you there.
We can't snark alone.
YouTube and Facebook, as we mentioned earlier. Let's do the Remember When thing. Because there is more, yes, more crazy news from the past.
Wait, I just got a new...
What?
new thing for our show, a new tagline. Friends don't let friends snark alone.
I don't think that's going to make it on the t-shirt collection.
Probably not.
Well, I've got crazy picture of Elon Musk doing a bad thumbs up, or a Fonzie. I'm not sure what he's doing here.
He's not originally from the United States. This is from
Business Insider. And don't even get me started on his dancing. Reuters keeps showing that dancing clip when he was on stage, when he was doing that awful.
Like 10 years ago?
No, it was a couple years ago when he was going to open an Asian plant for making Teslas. An early SpaceX engineer crawled inside an imploding rocket on a jet in midair to save the company. SpaceX almost died aboard a C-17 jet above Hawaii. Way back in 2008, before the company had successfully launched a single rocket, two dozen SpaceX engineers were transporting its Falcon 1 rocket to Hawaii inside an Air Force jet. And from there, a barge would carry it to the company's launch facilities in the Marshall Islands for one more launch attempt. It was the company's last chance. If this failed, SpaceX would be done for. Sorry, I had to do that at least once. But as the jet descended ahead of landing, the SpaceXers heard a loud, quote, a loud, terrible popping noise. Oh, that's just my knees. According to the new book by Eric Berger, a journalist and senior space editor for Ars Technica, the rocket was imploding because of a pressure imbalance. So Zach Dunn, that's a great name, one of the SpaceX's newest engineers at the time. Hey, rookie, we got a job for you.
We got a job for you. Do you mind calling in there?
He crawled into its belly. I'm sure that was purely voluntary, too. His quick fix saved the company and possibly his own life. But yeah, not necessarily in that priority order.
And his job.
Berger's book, quote, Liftoff, that's what it's titled, describes this moment and other wild events from SpaceX's early years, including the construction of a launch pad on a remote island, a mutiny staged by engineers trapped on the island without food. Well, that sounds like a reality show. And a scramble to send a commercial rocket into orbit. Good times, good times. There's a picture of the cover. If you want to check this out, there is a link. On episode 634, chuckchat.com/technorama. You can find it there. We invite you to head on.
You know what?
What?
There's a, I'm trying to remember if it was on Netflix. There is a documentary about SpaceX, and they were talking about this very situation, all the rockets they were sent off till they got one right. And that was the start, of course, everything for them. And they never, I don't remember them mentioning that guy doing that, which they should have. That's pretty important.
Yeah, he saved their bacon, man.
Yeah.
How about a bonus for this guy? Throw me a bone.
Yeah, right.
Well, he's no longer with them. I know he started his own 3D printing company for another space company of some sort.
Good for him.
Yeah. Take that, Elon Musk.
Ha! Right. Ryan, we have a bad Fonz.
Yeah.
We have another story about photography, Brian.
Let Craig take this since he's the photographic genius of the group.
When did he earn that title?
I signed it for him at Christmas. I said it was from Santa.
Self-titled photographer.
Yeah, right. All right. So a Finnish astrophotographer, JP. Now I see why you gave it to me. Metsävainio. All right. That's good. That's close enough. Has released a Milky Way photo that took him nearly 12 years to create. It's a 1.7 gigapixel image, has a cumulative measure of time of 1,250 hours.
Wow.
So Metsävainio. That's no L in there. Metsävainio.
Just call him Met for short. Give him a nickname. Met,
yeah. Began the shooting the project back in 2009. And for the next 12 years, he focused on different areas and objects of the Milky Way, shooting stitched mosaics of them as individual artworks. To complete the high resolution view of the Milky Way as a whole, I started to say wormhole, as a whole. Met then set out to fill in the gaps that weren't covered by his original artwork. I think this is all I think this is a first image ever showing the Milky Way in this resolution and depth in all three color channels, he says to Petapixel, who's the website we're reading. The photo is 100,000 pixels wide, comprises of 234 individual panels stitched together. And there is a picture there. Wow. You can kind of see the different patterns, the pattern that they put together. The photo spans 125 degrees of the sky from Taurus to Cygnus and shows about 20 million visible stars. And there's also an overlay of a picture. I'm not sure if you're showing this, that where his picture is in relation to the sky.
Okay. 12 years to create, and you're taking a image of the same, roughly the same section of sky. That's a lot, because we don't look at the same section of sky all year round as the Earth travels around the sun. Yes, mm-hmm. It travels around the sun, people. Get used to it.
I don't believe it. It's all flat, man. Like,
your winter constellations are obviously different than your summer constellation, so he can only work on this a certain time of the year, obviously only at night. It's like, yeah, right. That, 12 years to come up with this picture, that's phenomenal. What dedication. And you know, he's I don't know where he was, but if he's shooting this in Finland, you know, it ain't pretty clear weather every night.
No. But what's really cool is you can click on the picture and they will give you, I don't know if this is the full size, but it gets a pretty large picture and it looks beautiful.
It kind of looks like Starry Night.
You know what I think it looks like? I think it looks like you're looking at a topography of the Earth and there's like, you know, different land, you know, in the water.
Okay.
It's really impressive. It's really cool looking.
It looks like you're looking at island chain.
I want to blow this thing up. Really, really lots. Wow. Holy cow. Do it. You have. Yeah. Okay. I'm just going to say you have to double click through this thing. Go find the show notes. Episode 634. Mm-hmm. Chuckchat.com/technorama. And you can scroll sideways for a week here. This is just. Hubble ain't got nothing on this picture.
Here, for people in the chat room, I will post this in the chat room.
That is
super cool.
Oh, and there's a close-up of M1 on the far left, and I guess M27 on the far right.
I guess they should trying to show the beginning and end, you know, where it belongs.
Woohoo! Wow.
Yeah, awesome.
Okay.
That's amazing.
Look, if you've got an ultra-wide monitor, this has to be your background.
I like it. Look at the very bottom. It says an apparent size of the moon, which I guess from his perspective,
it's what about the size. It's a beautiful thing. That is just awesome. Wow. Okay. I'm done doing my astro geek on that one.
Well, there's also a really cool thing. Talks about his gear in there too. So read the article, because he goes into details about his technical gear he uses.
Oh, yes. Very nice. Very nice.
Which is cool.
So I was just going to say, obviously he wasn't using the same thing all the time, but up to 2014, I was using an old Mead LX200 GPS 12-foot scope. QHY9 Astrocam, Canon EF 200 millimeter f/1.8, camera optics, and a Bader narrow set filter set. He writes, after 2014, he had a 10 micron 1000 equatorial mount, Apogee. Alta, man, oh my God, Alta U16 Astro camera, Tokina ATX 200 millimeter f/2.8 camera lens, and an Astrodon 50 millimeter square narrowband filter set. He said, I've shot many details with longer focal length before 2014 by using his Mead 12-foot telescope scope with a reducer. And after 2014, Celestron Edge 11-foot reducer. Is that 11-foot inches? M-foot. The quieter camera has been a Lodestar and a Lodestar 2.
It's insane. High-end gear.
Oh, yeah. I know a guy here in town. He just, his telescope alone was about $50,000. Yeah. He had the building with the roof that would slide off.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was really cool. That was amazing. That was when, not early 2000, but, yeah, somewhere around 2005-ish, I guess they were, we were when the Mars was closest to the Earth. I forget when we went there and we looked at the telescope through that. It was pretty cool.
Very cool. Anyway. We have one more, remember when story. This one goes kind of way back. So Brian, would you like this one?
Yeah, sure. Greek ships carrying parts of the Parthenon. Yes, parts of the Parthenon is giving up more secrets. So the latest expedition of divers to the wreck of the Mentor, which sank off the island of Kythera in 1802, has recovered several pieces of the ship's rigging, coins, and leather soles of a shoe, a metal buckle, a token for playing cards, two chess pieces, fragments of cooking utensils, and other seemingly mundane objects, but of course, very interesting objects because it gives a, you know, a slice of life at the time when that ship sank.
Now they're priceless.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, it's like crap, and you're like, who cares? But yeah, archaeologists care.
A fork?
Yeah, a fork. So when it sank, the ship was carrying marble sculptures chipped from the badly damaged Parthenon in Athens, later known as Elgin's Marbles or the Parthenon Marbles. These spectacular sculptures, which depict Greek gods, heroes, and animals, are now on display in the British Museum of London. But it's the small objects recovered that are the intriguing aspects. It gives the, you know, what the life was like on board at the time and when it sank, you know. So that's what they're really interested in. The targets understand how people were living and how life was on board, not only for the passengers, but also for the crew. They found gold coins from Utrecht in Holland, as well as from Spain, and also coins from the Ottoman Empire. So it's a really cosmopolitan group of people that were on the Mentor. Now, the interesting thing is that the Mentor was a American-built brig that belonged to a British diplomat, Thomas Bruce, who is a Scottish nobleman, titled with the as the 7th Earl of Elgin. Elgin, as he was known, used the ship to carry antiquities to England that he collected while stationed in Constantinople. Anyone?
Istanbul.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. he was a British ambassador to the Ottoman Empire. Although the ship made it to Kythera, where the passengers and crew scrambled onto the rocks, the Mentor soon sank beneath about 65 feet of seawater. So it's interesting because the sculptures were shipped to England, and Elgin sold them to the British Museum in 1816. Now, Elgin claims he paid for the sculptures and that he obtained a decree from the ruling Ottoman government, because remember, Greece was under Ottoman control for the longest time.
Oh, that's right.
But there, of course, there's no evidence of this decree, according to the British Committee for the Reunification of the Parthenon Marbles, which is a non-governmental organization. So when, of course, Greece recovered its independence from the Ottomans in 1832, it said, we want them back.
You'd think, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, we got this half-assembled building. Can we put it back together? Because you've got all the pieces in London.
Right. And when they basically said that, you know, the Elgin Marbles were at the top of the list to be recovered. And, of course, they've been going, you know, the Greek government has demanded it multiple times. And, of course, the British Museum has gone
to them. No, we'll be out of business if we give away all our good stuff.
Yes.
If they call, don't answer the phone, Gladys.
Well, they, you know, they say we want them back. And the British government is like, well, we'll loan them to you for a little while.
Yeah.
Is that nice of them? So nice of them.
When you're talking about marble, you're talking about the marble of the columns?
Well, it's marbles. They call it the marbles because it's like all the statuary that was part of the Parthenon that was there. So
they've already got the frieze, which were the panels around the top of the columns. They had like little squares. Mm-hmm. And you could see this. And as well as up on the very top where it goes to the apex, like the front panel right under the crest of the roof. There was that whole scene about chariots and horses and what I've seen these. They're really impressive. And to be up close to them and go, wow, this was on the Parthenon at one point. And then I get the same feeling when I see the mummies in the British History Museum going, these really belong back in Egypt. This really belongs back in Greece. But
And that's kind of the thing is that, you know, this, so more than 200 years has passed and it's of course rotting the ship. And so they're under a timetable to get as much of it, you know, excavated as they can before it's all lost.
Right.
So, they're basically, you know, working as fast as they can, and they're hoping to find more things. But of course, they're not finding any more Parthenon pieces. They're more interested in the day-to-day stuff. And I thought this was an interesting quote. "We are excavating the ship that is associated with the most painful episodes in the recent history of Greece. I think it's very important to show that we're not only asking for things, but we're also working for the protection of everything that is involved." So they're very magnanimous, I would say, compared to the British, who are like, meh, it's ours.
Fighters, keepers. You would have some pieces that were... not colored the same, so, you know, slightly off color.
You can keep the fork.
Yeah. I think that's the important thing, is that they're sharing this with the various countries that actually they belong to. So their citizens belong to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very magnanimous. Like I said, yep. They are.
All right. Let's do our patron thing, because we have some of our patrons watching us live. Thank you very much.
They're watching us. Why do you say so?
They take care of this. You may have noticed new headphones, because the old ones are literally rotting on our heads. I think Brian was over here a while ago, and when you leave, you have black circles on your ears.
Oh, yeah. I just threw my old ones
very
out.
Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd sit there and go, no, no, no. Oh, yeah, there's a good one.
Yeah. Which one is going to not leave me with? It's almost like that gag with the binoculars, man, where you have the black circles on your eyes.
Are you talking about Spock? With the Spock one?
Or radar? No, it was Colonel Blake who did. Somebody on MASH did that too. All right, thank you, patrons. We are using your money as wisely as possible. It was time to get headphones. So, Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, we thank you. Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown.
That guy, he contributes. Let me tell you,
very generous of him. Mm-hmm. Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer, more of these generous, wonderful people. Danny Mortensen, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros. Thank you, Gary, watching live. Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble, and Jorga Schrauen are still at it after all these years. Thank you, Christina and Kyle and Leon, Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, Chris Martinez. These people think this show is worth something. That's amazing in itself. Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshey, Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and Sweet Steve London are all on our award-winning list.
Hey, do we actually need to charge Brian for this episode?
No, I charge you is what I should do for my appearance fee. Oh,
hey. His appearance.
I'm waving it this time. You're welcome.
Yeah, we're waving at you, too.
Grab an envelope. We're going to mail him a dollar.
If you think this show is worth it, had some fun, learned something by accident, or something happened that was worth your attention, and you weren't just playing this in the background. You're not just playing this in the background, are you?
Well, there go Chuck and Craig again.
While you're writing code, we're calling you out. Hey, you can go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast, and for as little as a dollar a show, we'll get you on that list of honorable mentionees, and we record a special show right after this that comes out first in this weird order that we do, with unedited open discussion content. If you want a testimonial, don't talk to one of the people that's doing this already.
Right.
Talk to our marketing department. They'll get it for you. So thank you very much to all the very wonderful, generous people that do this week in and week out. We thank you. All right. Now, Brian, have you been on since we started this new segment?
Negatory.
Okay. It's kind of like the media corner, but that's a news story we get from somewhere else. These are our own testimonials about things we've watched recently. It's called
It all started because of COVID. So we were watching more things at home. So we thought we'd talk about it.
So we even have a little intro theme. Ooh. And we have this gag that sometimes works on screen, but pass me the remote. Craig, that's a mouse. What are you doing?
Yeah. I was trying to hold your hands.
So the one that I watched recently this past week was recommended by some coworkers. It's called Behind Her Eyes on Netflix. Now, I'm going to warn you, it's 6 episodes and it starts out slow. Okay, I'm into episode 4 going, come on, give me something. And then they finish up that 4th episode and it's like you just went over the edge of the roller coaster. It is. And the ending, not going to spoil it. Well worth it. Well worth it. It's about 3 main characters. It's kind of a love triangle thing. It's not a rom-com, don't worry. And it's a psychiatrist and a divorced mom. They're having this affair, and the wife at home, who was in an institution, and she had a friend in the institution who is no longer in the picture. And you start to figure out what happened and the secret that they're keeping. And meanwhile, there's this whole trust of, wait a minute, who's really the bad guy here? Is it the psychiatrist dude? Is it his wife? Who? What is going on? And when they give that reveal at the end, I spotted it just a few minutes before, but it was well worth it. I'm like, oh my gosh. It is a mind trip. That's all I got out of my coworkers. Like, that was a mind trip. And I was watching like the first three and a half episodes going, what? Right. But when they unload it, the buildup was worth it. You're like, oh. And then, of course, they have one of those flashbacks to remind the viewer, this happened, clue, this happened, another clue we gave you, this happened, another clue we gave you. And you're like, they did tell us the story, but you didn't see it coming anyway. So well worth it. You got to watch with a keen eye and just like suck up the details. One of those stories. And then when you get at it, you're like, yeah, it was worth it. So I give this like a 7.5. I really, really wanted to like it more, but it started out slow. So be prepared for that. But the ending, off the charts. So Behind Her Eyes on Netflix, loved it. I don't know if anybody else in the chat has seen that. But Craig, why don't you've got three more here. Have you seen any of these, Brian, that are on our list?
No, I'm really behind, unfortunately, because okay. In the evenings, we play Animal Crossing.
Very together. Nice. I've heard good things about that game.
Aww. Yeah, Mary and I play Animal Crossing, so it's a lot of times we do that. We haven't watched a whole lot. I mean, some of these are on my list to see, but of course, I'll get to them whenever. That's the thing.
About a year ago, I think Craig and I covered a story on Technorama about the last Blockbuster in Bend, Oregon.
And yeah, I think I was on that episode, maybe.
You think you were on that? I didn't see you on the Netflix special, but I really want to make a pilgrimage out there now. But
I didn't see us either.
it's
No, we talked about it though. I remember we talked about the last Blockbuster.
And how there were like three in Alaska and then they folded, and then Bend was the last one.
Last one.
So they made a Netflix special about this, and they spotlight the mom and her family and who's worked there and that it's still in business. And they even have celebrities that appear on this show. And say they're making
all the celebrities are reminiscing about you know, Blockbuster and what it meant to them.
Listen to that sound when the cassette box opens, or click when it shuts, and you know the printing and the label. And they even made a video cassette with that plastic box that said the last Blockbuster on it with that blue and yellow label. And the side printing and the case was kind of beat up and the plastic was sort of torn up. It was really well done. And it wasn't even a Blockbuster when it started. This last store started as their own franchise, as a mom and pop called Pacific Video. And they went through the whole history of why we have VCR rental stores. And because we don't have, you know, you don't rent music, you don't rent books in the library, kind of. But why do we rent movies? Well, it's because of the exorbitant price. They wanted like tapes were like $100.
Oh, more.
Yeah, they were.
Or more.
They're worth more. So when I worked at Warehouse Entertainment, we used to buy these, you know, videotapes for rental. And so if somebody lost one of them, they were usually $200+, depending on.
Yeah.
That's how much we paid retail for them. Of course, we got a discount, but of course, that's what we're charging them. So it's like somebody wanted, we had this one guy that used to come in all the time. He had he and his family lived on the reservation, so they had a lot of the casino money, or the beginnings of the casino money, as well as the freeway money that was coming through. So they also had a lot of wealth. He would buy movies brand new. He would order them, buy them. Him and his wife, we'd order like sets of them, and just he'd come out, pay him, no problem. Just go on. He was an awesome guy. He was hilarious. Hmm. But yeah, him and his wife would buy videotapes all the time, you know, $200 a pop. No worries.
Hey, I've got the ultimate didn't return story.
Oh, yeah?
Return a movie. Yeah. So when Kim and I went to go buy our first house, found this. I had a lien against me. So I was like, I had no idea what it was. So I went to the tax records. I had to go. She couldn't look it up in the computer. I had to go look in the, you know, paper.
It was on a 3x5 card somewhere.
Microfiche.
There are these huge books. And they couldn't find it. I couldn't find it. And somewhere, I'm trying to remember where the clue was. there was a video store, not Blockbuster, but a video store near me that I'd rented a movie from, and I just never returned it, but they closed. However, there was a lien against me. So we had to track it down, and I just paid for it. It was like $80. I had to pay for it to get the release the lien. Oh. What was funny was it was the movie that I bought the first night, or rented. Well, I guess I did buy it when Kim and I started dating, and it was Ace Ventura: Pet Detective. I still got the tape here at the house.
They made a joke about that too. It was like, you know, they showed a clip. I think it was Saturday Night Live, and they said, "Well, Blockbuster has filed for Chapter 11. Who won the tug of war over Tango and Cash now?"
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, right. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah, great story.
When I was growing up, I had my friend Mike, and his family had a video store, and we spent a lot of time in there. And it wasn't a Blockbuster. It was called Family Video. And just being around the movies when they came in, we got to watch them before we put them on the shelf. I know what I was thinking of. She was repairing an old computer.
Oh my gosh, the computer scenes made me cry.
I forget what computer it was, but
it was like an old IBM. I had a couple of those. I can't remember.
She had like four or five of them.
Yes.
But what was funny was she took a card out, and the card had dust all over it, and she dumped the dust inside the computer. I was like, "What are you doing?"
The whole thing was already filled with nasty.
It was already filthy. Oh, yeah.
It was. I mean, it was on her hands. It was on her shirt. It was. You know, she was.
I've mentioned this on the show before, but you know, she had mentioned that the software they used was what was kind of, they touched on that being an important part of Blockbuster because they were able to look up stuff pretty easily.
Yeah.
And then over at Mike's store, he had a PC Junior, and I did write a database for videotape management where people could, they would rent them out. They knew who they were, who had them, how much they cost when they came back. I was on the cusp of something important.
You could have sold it to Blockbuster and made millions. Yeah, yeah, we all have that story in our history. Oh, if only I had.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my two. Craig, you've got a couple?
Yeah, I'll touch on them real quick. I'm not going to give any spoilers out, but I watched Zack Snyder's Justice League that came out on Friday.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Thursday. And it is 4 hours long, okay? Get that out of the way. It's a long movie. It's 4 hours and 2 minutes.
Makes Lord of the Rings look like a trailer.
Yeah, pretty much. I liked the theatrical release all right, but this one, it used none of the footage that Joss Whedon had shot for as Zack's replacement for the theatrical cut. It all had stuff that Zack Snyder had shot. There was so much more context in all of the different things that happened, all the story beats from the theatrical cut. I mean, in essence, it's essentially the same movie, but there's more context to everything, and it made a lot more sense.
Well, geez, at 4 hours, I hope it has a little more context.
It did.
I mean, Chuck can make a movie in 4 hours that probably made good context.
Right. But I'll tell you this. I thought that it was an easy watch. It was not hard, even though it was 4 hours. I did take a little break, but it was an easy watch. I thought it was fantastic. I enjoyed it. It's a much better movie than the theatrical, I thought. I know our buddy Joe will disagree. He's already disagreeing. I got to watch his video of his review because he did not like it. But I thought it was great. It's worth a watch. If you enjoyed that one or the Zack Snyder stuff, the Man of Steel, this will be what you want to see. And the other thing was it just started. It's the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It's on Disney Plus, of course. I'm sure everybody knows Marvel. I thought it was fun. It's going to be like a long action movie. There's six episodes. They're about an hour a piece. So if you're into the Marvel scene, that is going to be a great show to watch, I think.
So it used to be called the Falcon and the Snowman, but they gave the Snowman a gun, and now he's the Winter Soldier. He's been rebranded.
They put a, I think Sean Penn's in this one. On him and a gun.
Chuck, there's no Sean Penn in this one. Sorry, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Craig, I thought you were giving it a grade here. You might want to spell out Disney Plus because it looks like you just gave it a D plus.
Yeah, so I was like, wow, that's harsh, Craig.
Yeah, Craig really didn't like this, did he?
No, I enjoyed it. It's just the first episode. I enjoyed it. I think it looks great. The visuals are fantastic. It's a lot of action scenes, so it's just like one of their big blockbuster movies. But it's six episodes.
All right, Brian, next time you're on the show, you're going to have to write something down that you watched.
You know, we haven't watched anything. I mean, we've watched a few things off and on, but it's like nothing. You know, we finished up the last season of Kim's Convenience, which is fantastic. I don't know if anybody's watched that. Mm-mm. It's about a convenience store that's owned by this Korean family in Canada.
Oh, wait, I think I read some or saw a trailer or something.
It's funny. It's amusing. And it's wrapping up. This is going to have one more season and it's going to be done. We did watch the new season of Bonding, which was pretty good. It's really short. Those are like 20-minute episodes. So it's about a woman who is a dominatrix and her best friend, her gay best friend, who becomes her assistant, reluctant assistant. And it's pretty interesting. He wants to be a stand-up comedian, and he's not very good at it, but this kind of gives him a different outlook on it. It's pretty good. But again, that's pretty much it. We haven't watched a whole lot of anything super new because Animal Crossing, it's fun to just kind of decompress and not have to think and just kind of goof around.
Oh, that's what I do that every day.
Games are good.
Pandemic or not. That's
what he calls it, going to work.
Yeah.
I hope my boss isn't listening.
Again. That takes us through the regular content. We've got one more question for you, though. Our question of the week this time is, what is your favorite opening scene to a movie? Ooh. Oh, that is a tough choice, Craig.
I know. I can think of several.
Oh, my goodness. And they go way, way back for good openers.
Wow.
Maybe not. For 10 minutes?
Maybe not. All right. We'll leave you with that.
I actually watched the opening. When I thought about that question, I went and looked it up.
You had to go watch it again.
Yeah, the opening.
All right.
I'll watch the movie again.
Let's steer this Winnebago out of here then. If you want to get a hold of us, you can reach us on the listener line. Let me bring that title up. See if the titles are working. I didn't get a ding, 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 so must be working. Yes! 707-530-2428 is our listener line. Haven't had a lot of calls recently. You might want to call. Make sure it still works. And if it
I hope it works.
If it doesn't work, send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com, to let us know.
We'll get the phone guy on it.
Because it doesn't do any good to leave somebody else a message. We get the random facts once in a while, but... Thank you, Brian. It has been fun hanging out with you once again.
Good talking to you, gentlemen, as always.
And Craig, I think the audio cue is coming up for the binary high five. Go ahead, shoot it to me.
All right, 101.
Thanks, everybody. Stay safe.
Keep growing that beard, Brian.